Tonight on the Daily Debrief, the disappearance of Jamie Claus.
The court finds that the three pleas are knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily given.
This man avoids a trial. Now he awaits his sentence.
It could be life itself. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Also, police talk to a father shortly before he drops his daughter from a bridge.
You felt comfortable letting him leave with her?
Yes, sir, I did.
The father is charged with murder. Should authorities have done more to prevent it? And new questions about why all charges against actor Jussie Smollett were suddenly dropped. The nation's most fascinating cases are on the Daily Debrief. It's Wednesday, March 27th. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller, along with Judge Ashley Wilcott. He's a killer and a kidnapper, but for what it's worth, he's not a liar. The Wisconsin man who said he killed a husband and wife in order to kidnap their daughter and hold her captive in his house lived up to his promise and pleaded guilty. Jake Patterson had told reporters in letters and phone calls that he would do so. Today it's official. He admitted to taking Jamie Claus after gunning down her father and her mother. The official plea is guilty on two charges of first-degree intentional homicide and one count of kidnapping or carrying without consent. The state agreed to drop a fourth charge of burglary with a dangerous weapon. Prosecutors also agreed not to charge Patterson in another county. During today's hearing, the defendant slowly cried as he admitted his guilt.
You are charged in count one as follows. That on or about Monday, October 15, 2018, in Barron County, you did cause the death of James M. Claus with intent to kill that person, contrary to section 940.01, sub 1, sub A, and 939.50 sub 3 sub A of the Wisconsin statutes, a Class A felony, and upon conviction shall be sentenced to imprisonment of life. How do you plead to that charge?
Guilty.
Count two charges as follows. On or about Monday, October 15, 2018, in Barron County, Wisconsin, you did cause the death of Denise J. Claus with intent to kill that person, contrary to section 940.01 sub 1 sub A and 939.50 sub 3 sub A of the Wisconsin statutes, a Class A felony, and upon conviction shall be sentenced to imprisonment for life. How do you plead to that charge?
Guilty.
And count three, you are charged with on or about October 15, 2018 in Barron County, Wisconsin, by force or threat of imminent force did carry JLC from one place to another without that person's consent and with intent to cause the victim to be secretly confined, contrary to section 940.31 sub 1 sub A and 939.50 sub 3 sub C of the Wisconsin statutes, a Class C felony, and upon conviction may be fined not more than $100,000 or imprisoned not more than 40 years or both. How do you plead to that charge?
He ultimately entered a guilty plea on that third charge. Patterson's attorneys were careful to note on the record that they explained to their client that he did not have to do this.
We are satisfied that this is free, knowing, and voluntary. Mr. Patterson has wanted to enter a plea from the day we met him, and we needed to really consider our own due diligence. We needed to read all the discovery. We needed to go through the materials. And we will say for the record, and Mr. Patterson is aware, that we don't even have all of the discovery yet. And that's not to say we don't have what we need. There are a lot of materials that are related to the search that, you know, is still coming in, but it's not relevant to what we need to do here. We have all the police reports surrounding the events at the home. We have all the police reports surrounding the rescue of Jamie. We have all of the police reports surrounding, you know, statements and interviews that we need to do what we need to do. And we have read that. We've watched hours and hours of videos. There's something in terms of videos, there's something like 800 gigabytes of video surveillance and other materials. So we've read what we need to read. We've talked to Jake about options, including a court trial, a jury trial. We've talked to him about motions, change of venue, substitution of judge, the opportunity to attempt to suppress his statement, you know, Miranda Goodchild motions. We've talked about potential NGI issues, motions in limine. We've discussed all that with him, and he's rejected all of that and decided that this is what he's wanted to do. He's been consistent with that from the time that we've met. So we have gone through all the materials with him. We've discussed them in detail with him, and he has always been consistent in his statements and his belief that this is exactly what he wants to do. This is his choice. We represent him. We work for him. And this is what he wants, and this is what we're going to do with him. So it is free, knowing, and voluntary.
The maximum penalty Patterson could receive when he's sentenced is 2 back-to-back life sentences plus another back-to-back 40-year sentence. My guest tonight is Judge Ashley Wilcott. Judge Wilcott, good to see you here in studio tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we don't know the words that were spoken between the attorney and the client during that plea hearing. But if I were to guess, there was probably a moment of humanity there in the midst of a discussion with a lot of people looking, thinking this defendant is a monster.
Yeah, and you know, you saw him put, the defense attorney put his hand on his shoulder, which is not always typical. And I do think that, and I think this attorney was protecting himself by putting everything on the record, but also made clear he has zealously represented his client and has probably some humanity for him.
And look, there's different sides to life. We saw a sliver of that. The question now turns to punishment. We have a sentencing hearing coming up. Should this guy get anything less than the maximum?
I don't believe so at all, because he did it. And look what he did. Not only did he murder the parents, 88 days. He kidnapped her, kept her for 88 days. But Aaron, what if she had not escaped? What would have happened then? She never would have been found. Maybe she would have been killed. Maybe. I think the maximum sentence is appropriate in this case.
I would agree in this case, because look, what if we say, okay, he's a young man, he's in his early 20s, maybe he can reform himself. What's he going to be doing sitting in prison? Thinking of Jamie Claus. We also have to worry about protecting her.
Absolutely. Not only her, but also what if he, quote unquote, falls in love with somebody else and does the same inappropriate criminal thing because of that emotion? You can't take that risk, in my opinion.
Okay, so we have this coming up in May, this sentencing hearing. We're hearing from the prosecutor that both sides will be able to make arguments, of course. Usually we hear victim impact statements. Those are probably, if we hear them in the traditional sense, going to be disturbing.
Absolutely, and I don't know how much we'll hear, because this family has been very careful to say, please respect our privacy, so I don't know how much they're actually going to offer, but it's not going to be good.
It may be that they speak through the prosecutor. We will have to wait and see when that comes up. Judge Wilcott, we'll be back to you in just a couple of minutes. A Chicago prosecutor's decision to suddenly drop charges against actor Jesse Smollett is raising new questions tonight. The about-face came after a grand jury believed Smollett likely lied to police when he claimed two men perpetrated a racist and homophobic attack upon him. Reporting by the Chicago Sun-Times indicates the prosecutor was talking to a former Michelle Obama staffer who was a friend to Smollett's relatives. Also, the prosecutor, who actually was involved with dropping the charges, said he still thinks Smollett lied to police. The top prosecutor, however, is saying Smollett's deal is no different than other cases where charges are dropped or deferred. The defense now has the case of a Florida man accused of dropping his 5-year-old daughter off a bridge and killing her. John Johnchuk is accused of murdering Phoebe Johnchuk by releasing her into Tampa Bay. The question is whether the defendant is legally insane or whether he can be held criminally responsible. Prosecutors are trying him on charges of first-degree murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and aggravated fleeing and eluding officers. A police officer who was with the defendant in a squad car testified that the defendant appeared to be faking it when he was crying.
He was very quiet, non-emotional, except for a couple of times he would almost appear to be trying to make himself to forcefully cry, and then that time would only last.
You can answer.
Would only last for like a couple of seconds, and it would just go back to like a blank look.
It didn't appear to be genuine crying to you.
No, it was not. It was like he was forcing himself to create tears.
How many times did that happen?
A couple of times. He made 3 spontaneous statements at that point. He said at one point he did not throw her off the bridge, that he dropped her into the water. He stated that you don't know what I've been going through. And he also made a statement as what did he did not know what he did wrong.
Another detective testified about interrogating the defendant. Here is the cross-examination.
Asked you if he could see his Bible, right?
That's correct.
John asked you if Phoebe was okay. I think you used the word all right.
I believe that's accurate.
And then at one point, he went on to say to you that he wanted to tell you everything, right?
Yes, ma'am.
He started telling you that he had felt different in the last few weeks.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And he told you about recently being at the church.
Yes, ma'am.
And that he had spoken with a man by the name of Father Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
Father Bill had told him, John, that Pope Francis wasn't the real Pope, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And that he, meaning John, was in fact the real Pope.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And John also told you on at least one occasion that this whole thing that was going on was, he used the word conspiracy, right?
Yes, ma'am.
The defendant's own mother testified, of all things, about swimming lessons for the girl who was eventually drowned. Prosecutors used this testimony to point to the defendant's alleged callousness.
In 2013, did you have a conversation with the defendant regarding swim lessons for Phoebe?
Yes.
What was that conversation?
Just because she liked to go swimming and everything, but she wanted you to hold her, and she wouldn't go without floaties or anything.
So did you recommend swimming lessons
mm-hmm.
for her?
Yes.
Okay. You said in 2013, you said that she went swimming with floaties. Was the defendant present for such a time?
Yes.
Okay. And she needed floaties and someone to hold her?
Uh-huh. She liked somebody to hold on to her, yes.
Okay. And about the last 6 months of her life, were you her primary caregiver?
Yes.
Okay. Has she learned to swim at any time during that time?
No.
There was also a bizarre question from the jury about a mistrial. Here is the juror's conversation with the judge.
You had a question, I guess a couple questions. One about what would happen if the jurors couldn't come to decisions, and then what would happen if somebody sabotaged the trial?
Yeah,
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. What were we going to say?
Like not a hung jury, but a it's not coming to mind.
Well, when you said sabotage, what did you mean by that?
Just anything. It was just a question.
Okay.
I wondered. Like, my main question was, what happens if you have a not a hung jury, but what's the other? I'm not thinking.
Deadlock?
Mistrial.
Oh, okay.
That was my main question. Like, I was wondering, do they pick another jury, or do we still have to keep on going?
If there was a mistrial, you wouldn't keep on going.
Yeah, okay. That's
right.
What I was just wondering. That was my main question.
Okay.
So.
But there's no particular reason you asked either one of those
questions. No, I was just wondering. And morally, mostly because of the mistrial question of whether the original jury had to keep on going after the mistrial, you know, or did they pick a new one?
No.
Okay.
Anyone have any other questions?
No,
okay, thank you. We'll be right with you.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Just curious? Okay, Judge Ashley Wilcott. At the point that this question was asked, the state was still in the middle of the state's case in chief. The defense has the case now, but what's going on here? Jurors asking questions about sabotage, mistrial, deadlock. Are they back there deliberating? What are they doing?
I don't know what they're doing. So first of all, it's unusual that jurors get to ask questions in my experience during the trial, but in Florida they get to and they can ask it of the judge, and the judge then asks the witness or answers the question. Judge answered the question. To me, it sounds like a jury doesn't want to serve. I mean, to me, that sounds like they are discussing it and they want out of this case and they don't want to have to come back, and how can they do it? And if there's a mistrial, do they come back? No? Okay. It's suspicious.
It's strange, and it makes me wonder, okay, is the judge thinking about potentially bringing an alternate in or something like that? Because why is this going through someone's mind?
Why is it going through someone's mind? The only reason I can think of, Aaron, is the context that they don't want to have to finish this trial. They want to be excused. If I were the judge, I think I would take this one step further to make certain it doesn't leave open grounds for appeal.
That was my next question. Okay, did the judge handle this the right way by even answering the question that way? I mean, it seemed to me that the judge had to at least try to get into this and see, okay, is somebody back there trying to sabotage the case? Because that's the word that the juror used in the question. But could the questions have been asked of the jury in a different way?
I think absolutely. And I think that I would have. I'm not saying she did it incorrectly, but I think you need to flesh it out more to protect the process and ensure there's no good appeal on these grounds. So how did he even come up with that language? Where did this even come from? I think I would have questioned all the jurors, to be honest, and I might have even given the attorneys an opportunity to ask questions.
Yeah, individually, probably separate from other jurors. You know, are you concerned that someone else is doing something to sabotage this case?
Absolutely agree.
You may have made some headway with such a discussion. Great to have that input. Still ahead tonight here on The Debrief, the owner of the New England Patriots issues a plea on charges he solicited prostitution. Plus, more on the death of Phoebe Johnchuk. We hear testimony from an officer who saw the defendant and his daughter, but did nothing before her death. We look into his actions when we head back to the courtroom after the break. Patriots owner Robert Kraft has officially waived his right to appear in court this week to answer charges that he solicited a prostitute. Kraft was caught in what police described as an investigation into human trafficking, though Kraft was not charged with that. According to court documents, Kraft is pleading not guilty and is demanding a jury trial. Police say they have video of Kraft being sexually touched by a masseuse. It's possible Kraft's attorneys will fight the warrant, which allowed the premises to be bugged and recorded. The man accused of murdering a Georgia beauty queen may have his trial delayed. Ryan Dukes' defense team filed emergency motions seeking more time and a delayed start so that the Georgia Supreme Court can address constitutional questions hovering over the case. Ryan Duke is charged with malice murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, burglary, and concealing the death of another in relation to Tarrant Grinstead's 2005 death. His co-defendant, Bo Dukes, who is not a relative, was convicted last week for concealing Grinstead's death. Back to the case now, the Florida man who dropped his daughter into the nighttime waters of Tampa Bay. A medical examiner testified about what killed Phoebe Johnchuk. Her body was very cold when it was recovered.
And the ER, the core temperature was recorded at as 7 degrees Celsius, which is 44.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
What's the normal temperature?
Normal temperature would be 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
So this is about half or so of the normal temperature, even less than half.
It's very cold, yes.
Were they able to raise her temperature in their life-saving efforts?
They did. They surrounded her by warm blankets and infused warm IV fluids and got her temperature up to 24 degrees Celsius, which is 75.2 degrees Fahrenheit.
What was the cause of death?
Cause of death was drowning.
What was the manner of death?
Homicide.
And what was the contributory condition?
Hypothermia.
This has led to many questions about whether Phoebe Johnchuk's death could have been prevented. One officer who actually spoke with the defendant before Phoebe's death testified that he did not have enough evidence to involuntarily commit the defendant under the Baker Act. That is Florida's mental health law.
I'll always kind of start off with, you know, do you feel like hurting yourself or anyone else?
Did you ask him that?
Yes, I did.
And his response was?
No, he did not.
Okay. What else was on that checklist?
So I'd like to ask some questions like, are you hearing things that you don't think are there or seeing things that aren't there?
What was his response to those questions?
No, he did not.
Okay, so he was having no delusions or hallucinations that he told you?
He told me he was not.
All right. Go ahead.
Once he said no to those questions, the line of questioning is pretty limited from there. I can only go off the feedback they give me.
Did he mention that he had any kind of mental illness?
He'd said previously that he'd been diagnosed as bipolar years back and that he'd been on medications, but he was no longer on those medications.
Was he calm?
Very calm.
Coherent?
Yes, sir.
Responsive to questions?
Yes, sir.
At the end of that conversation, what occurred?
I found that there was no legal reason for a Baker Act, and he was free to leave.
Okay. Did you speak with the priest at all?
Briefly, for about 5 minutes.
Was that before or after you allowed him to be released?
After.
Okay. Anything about that conversation with the priest that changed your view of what you were doing?
No, sir.
Did you have an opportunity to see his daughter, Phoebe, that day?
Very briefly.
Okay. Tell us about that.
They were walking out the front doors of the church. I saw them hand in hand. She appeared happy and waving, and they walked out the front doors of the church.
And you felt comfortable letting him leave with her?
Yes, sir, I did.
Back to Judge Ashley Wilcott one last time. So, Judge, you preside over juvenile cases. You've been involved with juvenile justice. Matters of this nature, did you agree with that officer's decision that he could not Baker Act this particular defendant?
Based on the defendant's actions at that time, yes. I don't think that that was a bad decision based on the fact that he was not threatening to hurt himself or someone else. But what I disagree with, I do think this could have been prevented because there were so many opportunities along the line of this of the defendant's life since he was five all the way when he had his own child that agencies could have stepped in to help. And I think this child likely would have been removed from his care, and he could not have done this to her. So this could have been completely prevented, in my opinion.
Okay, this is based on the state Children and Family Services office down there. That's where your concern sits.
The DCF, yes. But also in terms of the involuntary commitment and the times that's happened to him, did he get the appropriate treatment that he could maintain his mental health outside of being committed? If the answer were yes, then ostensibly he'd be handling it and he wouldn't have done anything.
I did a lot of research in the Baker Act back when the Parkland school shooting happened. And look, that's tricky because authorities can't just take someone and lock them up without due process rights. There's a constitution that's superimposed over these mental health laws, and for good reason. We don't want political dissidents locked up willy-nilly in this country. There's a First Amendment as well. So it gets really tricky when police officers are faced with making an on-the-spot decision as to whether or not someone needs involuntary commitment for mental health reasons.
Absolutely, and I can tell you nationwide, the standard is, have they threatened to hurt someone else, or are they a threat to themselves? And if the answer to those things are no, then you cannot involuntarily commit an individual.
The call from the defendant's own attorney, that's a little bit more concerning, though.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's when they need to reassess.
All right, exactly. Judge Ashley Wilcott, great to have you on The Debrief again tonight.
Thank you, Aaron.
And thanks for those of you who are watching along. You can join us again tomorrow at 5 o'clock Eastern on the Law and Crime Network. For The Daily Debrief, we'll see you tomorrow.